Mike Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thanks for tuning in. Thanks for joining us tonight. I hope you're going to hang out for a while. Again, welcome to Dallas, Texas. Listening to us tonight on KMNY 1360 AM on the dial. Glad to have Dallas, Fort Worth back. Congressional candidate John Lash will be joining us in a few minutes to give us an update on his campaign in Illinois' 14th District. And speaking in the Midwest, we had her on the other night, our good friend, congressional candidate in Michigan's 9th, Nancy Skinner. She needs your online vote. This costs you nothing. It only takes a few seconds. So go to democracyforamerica.com, okay? Democracyforamerica.com and vote for her. That'll help her earn some national campaign money. And if you want more information on her campaign, go to skinnerforcongress.com. But the democracyforamerica.com site is real important. Take you just a minute, okay? And because you probably won't have any more chances to hear him discuss his vision for America, we have several clips from John Edwards tonight announcing that he's, odd choice of words, suspending his presidential campaign. It would have been very easy, wouldn't it, to have said ending? I don't know. I don't know what it is. I'm just grabbing at straws. You know, both my candidates now are in the wind. Dennis Kucinich and now John Edwards. Corporate America wins again, huh? Right? We're going to play it for you very quickly here. Email from Edie over in Dogpatch, Alabama, who writes, Mike, I'm not even going to try to call in tonight. The rewriting of the campaign of John Edwards has already begun, and it isn't pretty. According to Blowhard with Chris Matthews. Blowhard? Oh, okay. Edwards has nothing to offer Clinton or Obama. He was just a third wheel. Let me digress from Edie's email here. I am so sick of Chris Matthews, I could just scream. The way he overtalks people, the way he interrupts people, the arrogance of this little twit, I'm tired of his man crushes. I'm tired of his toxic self-awareness. It's really bugging me. You know, at least with the pig man or with Hannity, you kind of expect, okay, you know what they're about. And Matthews, who tends to just despise Hillary Clinton, it was so funny. I was watching, was it today? Keith Olbermann and Hillary Clinton, I believe it was today. Hell, I'm losing track here. We're interviewing Hillary after her no-win win last night in Florida. And was it last night? Anyway, it all kind of runs together. Anyway, just watching Chris Matthews, who looked like he just had a lemon up his butt just because he had to talk with Hillary Clinton. It's unbelievable. And I think she's got him totally scoped out because, you know, she just smiled so sweetly into the camera, just like, you know, Chrissy boy, I know you hate me, and I know you wish I had a penis, but I don't. I'm just a girl. So what can I say? You got to interview me, nyan, 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 nyan. And there's this, I'm tired of Chris Matthews, but I digress. Back to Edie's email. Only Margaret Carlson stated the obvious. Edwards doesn't have to endorse anyone before Super Tuesday. Those who are planning to support him most likely will vote for Obama. The fact that Obama gave a gracious speech after Edwards' withdrawal didn't hurt either, praising both John and Elizabeth for their selfless work on behalf of the middle and working class. Obama illustrated his similar beliefs on these and other issues. I can tell you this for certain, he writes. My daughter in Atlanta, my sister and I had planned to vote for Edwards on Super Tuesday. We will be voting for Obama. Okay, I think we're still going to vote for, because I'm sure his name will be on the ballot here in Atlanta, here in Georgia. We're just going to go ahead and vote for him. I don't care. I don't care the fact that he's off, you know. Unless, if Kucinich's name is still on, we'll vote for Kucinich. Oh, my God. Okay, let's hit some John Edwards. It was fitting and appropriate that he went back to the Ninth Ward in Orleans. Was it the Ninth Ward today where, when he announced his candidacy, he was working with some kids who were helping to build, I think it was Habitat for Humanity, some homes. I'm very distressed about Edwards' withdrawal. No, he wasn't Jesus. He didn't walk on water. He had some boats in his past that were problematic, to say the least. But I don't care. His attitude towards corporate America, his attitude toward the working poor and the middle class, these were attitudes that I can connect to, I can understand. And while I'm very, very intrigued with Barack Obama's candidacy, it's like I said the other night, it's high flying, it's a soaring episode in American political history. If I had to choose right now, of course I would vote for Obama. But and as far as Hillary Clinton, I understand the importance of for the first time in our history, someone who is a woman who is so close to the major nomination and the presidency in this country. So I understand all that, but the way this selection was made, and in part it was made not by you and me. Not by the Edwards campaign, but by the very careful selection of how much exposure on television, how much exposure to each of these three candidates' positions, the way the media just absolutely insisted that there be a fight between Obama and Clinton, specifically because it's a black male and a white woman. They make me sick, all of them. The entire television medium in this country, just makes me want to throw up. I hate the way they manipulate all of us, and I hate the fact that we're so manipulable. I really do, and I put myself in that category too. I'm easily manipulated. The other night I watched a 2-hour Hallmark special. What was it, Sunday night, Kathy? And sat there and just got totally turned inside out from watching the damn commercials. So, yeah, I'm easily manipulated, too. But I hate what media has done to this campaign. I hate it. But here's Edwards, ever gracious, ever optimistic. He declares his confidence that a Democrat will take back the White House in 2008. Too bad, at this point, it looks like it won't be him.
We do not know who will take the final steps to 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. But what we do know is that our Democratic Party will make history. We will be strong. We will be unified, and with our convictions and a little backbone, we will take back the White House in November, and we'll create hope and opportunity for this country.
Yeah, hope and opportunity. Boy, I'll tell you, those are a couple of words that have been deleted from the political vocabulary of most candidates, right? I mean, in a sincere way. Oh, yeah, they always talk about hope and opportunity. Blah, blah, blah. But I think Edwards really meant it. Here he outlines what he saw in his campaign and the issues that have to be addressed by the next president.
We walked the streets of Cleveland, where house after house was in foreclosure, and we said, we're better than this, and economic justice in America is our cause. And we spent a summer day in Wise, Virginia, with a man named James Lowe, who told us the story of having been born with a cleft palate. He had no health care coverage. His family couldn't afford to fix it. And finally, some good Samaritan came along and paid for his cleft palate to be fixed, which allowed him to speak for the first time. But they did it when he was 50 years old. His amazing story, though, gave this campaign voice. Universal health care for every man, woman, and child in America. That is our cause.
He also mentioned how he sat with poultry workers in Mississippi and janitors in Florida and nurses in California. He talked about how he and his people listened as child after child told Edwards about their worry about whether we would preserve the planet. On how recent leaders have turned their backs on Americans, here he is again.
We don't turn away from a neighbor in their time of need, because every one of us know that but for the grace of God, there goes us. The American people have never stopped doing this, even when their government walked away. And walked away it has, from hardworking people. And yes, from the poor, those who live in poverty in this country. For decades, we stopped focusing on those struggles. They didn't register in political polls. They didn't get us votes. And so we stopped talking about it. I don't know how it started. I don't know when our party began to turn away from the cause of working people, from the fathers who were working three jobs literally just to pay the rent, mothers sending their kids to bed wrapped up in their clothes and in coats because they couldn't afford to pay for heat. We know that our brothers and sisters have been bullied into believing that they can't organize and can't put a union in the workplace. Well, in this campaign, we didn't turn our heads. We looked them square in the eye and we said, we see you, we hear you, and we are with you, and we will never forget you. And I have a feeling that if the leaders of our great Democratic Party continue to hear the voices of working people, a proud progressive will occupy the White House.
We'll be right back. More of Edwards. Stay with us. I'm Mike Molloy.
Conservatives love to hate. It's Mike Molloy.
21 past the hour. In that little bit of sound we had for you right before the break, where Edwards said he didn't know when our party began to turn away from the cause of working people. Well, if you don't, John, I know you do. It was 1979. It was Ronald Reagan. It was the Reagan Democrats. Members of the Democratic Party who were all fascinated and captured by Ronald Reagan in what turned out to be his successful bid for the presidency, a guy that most working so-called Reagan Democrats had grown up with this guy. They knew him from his movies in the 40s. They knew him from television in the 50s and 60s. And all of a, then he was a governor of California in the 60s. And, of course, most people around the country didn't realize what the evil old bastard had done in California, where it concerned individual liberty and the Constitution, the U.S. Constitution. Of course, he was only a governor, so it really didn't matter. But on and on and on. And this smiley old fart finally gets to the point where he's got a slick team of Southern California ad people, just like Nixon did, pushing him, getting his face out there, and getting him elected. And so many otherwise sane Democrats who had worked hard in the Midwest, in the upper Midwest, in the upper South, who had worked hard all their lives, working at mill jobs and factory jobs and farming jobs, all of a sudden they decided, no, I think I'm going to vote for Reagan. And as they said that, these former Democrats, they just very, I don't know, carefully picked up a rusty knife and opened up their own throats. And bled all over the ground, or the drop forge they were working on, or the tractor they were driving, or the loom they were weaving on, and just bled to death. I mean, if ever working America had an enemy in this country in modern times, it was this ass, Ronald Reagan. So, yeah, John. And John grew up in North Carolina. I spent a lot of time in North Carolina. And I can remember going to into mill towns. I had business there, and going into mill towns and going to people's homes and realizing what a union would have done to have elevated their income and given their children some health care and kept the jobs in this country. I was in the Carolinas in the late 60s and early 70s, and there was a thriving textile industry there, thriving in terms of it was very profitable for the companies. And just about the time that organizers... if you want to know more about it, watch the movie. What was the movie about organizing? Our friend wrote the Norma Rae. If you want to know more about it, go back and look at the movie Norma Rae. But so that's when it happened, John. That's when it happened. That's when the Democratic Party turned away from the cause of working people and from the fathers who were working three jobs literally just to pay the rent, and mothers sending their kids to bed wrapped up in their clothes and in their coats because they couldn't afford to pay for heat. That's when it happened. And every Republican since then has not given a tinker's damn about working class or middle class or the working poor. They just don't care. They literally don't care. And so many Top flight Democrats don't give a damn either. They really, really, really don't. And that's one of the reasons that Edwards campaigned to me. He was saying the stuff that I needed to hear. Now, he said today that he had talked to both candidates who are now in the Democratic race, both Obama and Clinton, and gotten their promise for whatever it's worth. I don't know how much what it's worth. That they would focus on these issues. We'll see. Back to Edwards. He explains his devotion to the war on poverty, what he has called, well, this is what we're just talking about, what he has called the cause of his life.
With all of the injustice that we've seen, I can say this. America's hour of transformation is upon us. It may be hard to believe when we have bullets flying in Baghdad. It may be hard to believe when it costs $58 to fill your car up with gas. It may be hard to believe when your school doesn't have the right books for your kids. It's hard to speak out for change when you feel like your voice is not being heard. But I do hear it. We hear it. This Democratic Party hears you. We hear you once again. And we will lift you up with our dream of what's possible. One America that works for everybody. One America where struggling towns and factories come back to life because we finally transformed our economy by ending our dependence on oil. One America where the men who work the late shift and the women who get up at dawn to drive a two-hour commute, and the young person who closes the store to save for college, they will be honored for that work. One America where no child will go to bed hungry because we will finally end the moral shame of 37 million people living in poverty. One America where every single man, woman, and child in this country has health care. One America with one public school system that works for all of our children. One America that finally brings this war in Iraq to an end and brings our service members home with the hero's welcome that they have earned and that they deserve.
Boy, when you hear that cadence, when you hear that talk, that one America, it just, you know, I don't know about you, but it just gets me kind of rocking in my shoes. And I don't know. I'm sorry to see that he has suspended, interesting choice of words, his campaign. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Here in Washington, D.C.
Edwards, last one from Edwards today, announcing his decision to suspend his candidacy. And he made it from, I think it was the lower ninth ward, the same place he announced his candidacy almost 2 years ago, a year and a half ago. Here is Edwards with his announcement.
Today, I am suspending my campaign for the Democratic nomination for the presidency. But I want to say this to everyone, with Elizabeth, with my family, with my friends, with all of you and all of your support, this son of a mill worker is going to be just fine. Our job now is to make certain that America will be fine. And I want to thank everyone who has worked so hard, all those who have volunteered, my dedicated campaign staff who've worked absolutely tirelessly in this campaign. And I want to say a personal word to those I've seen literally in the last few days. Those I saw in Oklahoma yesterday, in Missouri, last night in Minnesota, who came to me and said, "Don't forget us. Speak for us. We need your voice." I want you to know that you almost changed my mind. Because I hear your voice, I feel you, and your cause is our cause.
Again, just personal note, both of the candidates now that I thought could really turn the country around are out, Kucinich and Edwards. Although, again, I'm intrigued by the choice of the word that Edwards used. Rather than I've ended my campaign or I'm finished or, you know, it's over or whatever, he said I've suspended it. So that just may be the weirdness that floats around in everybody's head right now, and of course I'm subject to it too, parsing words. George in Seattle wrote, Mike, the Democrats have done it again with their best general election candidate, Edwards, suspending his campaign. We're most likely going to lose the presidency. Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama should have sat this election out. The last thing this presidential election needed to have been about is gender and skin color. By running Hillary and Obama in this election cycle, the Democrats have changed the debate away from the criminal record of George Bush and his sorry bunch of Republican co-conspirators into a debate about Clinton haters and race bigots. The Democratic Party has committed political suicide, and with insane McCain as our next president, our nation will have committed real suicide. George in Seattle. Yeah, there's probably a lot of truth to that. And then Ben writes in, Mike, we have to nominate Obama. The alternative is McCain and nuclear war, his first opportunity to do so, because Hillary would lose to Charles Manson in a general election. I'm serious, Ben writes. The Hillary well has been poisoned continuously since 1992. They have never stopped. Even the most brilliant campaign ever in U.S. politics cannot overcome that negative. That's from Ben. So I don't know. I guess there was a Republican debate tonight on CNN. Where was that? At the Reagan Center in California?
I don't care.
I know you don't. But during the last commercial break, I flipped on the TV, and I guess it was right towards the end. There was Ron Paul. I forget. You know, why is Ron Paul and who's the preacher?
Huckleberry.
Why are they still in the race? I mean, really, Ron Paul and Huckleberry Hound. What the hell? But anyway, they're the four of them. I don't know what the question was, but you know what Ron Paul was talking. Oh, they were talking about Reagan. How all of them were really walking around with the ghost of Ronald Reagan in their drawers. And if you wanted really to reincarnate Ronald Reagan, dig him up out of the grave and put him back in the White House, vote for me. That's what all of these Republican pigs talk about. So that's what the subject was. I don't know. I guess Anderson Cooper, old 360 boy himself, was asking the questions. But what was just so weird is that what's his name? Ron Paul. When it came his turn to talk about his connection to Reagan, he said he'd been a Reagan supporter all the way back in 76 and certainly in 80, and that one of Reagan's warnings was that the fact that we'd gone off the gold standard was going to... And Ron Paul sitting there advocating that we get back on the gold standard. And you could see McCain with this dung-eating smile on his face, and Romney is just staring off into space, and Huckabee wonder what the hell he's talking about. But there's Ron Paul earnestly going on and on and on about getting us back on the gold standard. Yeah, that's a real barn burner out here in middle America, Ron. Yeah, keep talking about that, okay? Let's get back on the gold standard. Woo! All right, that'll make our money worth more, for sure. Yeehaw! Crazy old coot. I can't believe this guy. Oh, now don't send me any emails. You Ron Paul supporters, don't. I mean, you know, am I going to mock your candidate? Yes, because I'm in a pissy mood. Because a guy who could have run this country and run it well, John Edwards, had to get out today because American media... You know why media keeps Ron Paul around? Because they need a clown. They need somebody who will do backflips for them and wear funny paint and a big red nose. And that's what Ron Paul does. They had to get rid of Edwards because he was anti-corporate America, to at least to the extent of wanting to bring the hammer down on some of these sons of bitches. But Ron Paul, media will keep him around until, oh, I don't know, certainly after Super Tuesday, maybe beyond that. Why? Because he's one of those little people that when you go to the circus and the little car drives into the middle ring and all of a sudden 10, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17 clowns come tumbling out, Ron Paul's the last one. And media love this. Oh, yeah, let's get Hillary and Barack to fight. And we'll have on that side of the aisle, and over here, we'll have this little clown boy, Ron Paul, jumping around talking about the gold standard. Oh, my God, I hate them all. Let's move on to something a little bit more. This is kind of weird. I'll be going to Phoenix on the 22nd. We've got a big gig on the 23rd at KPHX and Nova M in Phoenix. Scott Ritter and I are going to be there, and it's going to be a hellraiser. I'm telling you, I'm not sure exactly what management has planned, but we may all wind up in jail when the gig is over and Nova M off the air, and everybody that works at KPHX in jail. It could be one of those, and everybody who attends would be passing a hat around to try to bail us out. I don't know. It's going to be an event, and it's February 23rd. Go to the KPHX website, 1480kphx.com, and get the information about it. But the reason I was thinking about that is because of this next story that caught my eye today, and this will especially be intriguing to our friends in the Great White North. A pilot on a Canadian airliner. Did it say what airline it is? Air Canada. I guess that's the only one y'all have up there, right? Anyway, the co-pilot, whose job it was to land this sucker at Heathrow in England. The pilot of this packed airplane had to be dragged screaming from his cockpit after apparently suffering a mental breakdown in midair. This is according to what newspaper? One of the London papers. Horrified passengers, it says here, on the flight from Canada saw the man being pinned down by fellow crew members as he yelled loudly and demanded to speak to God. Yeah, there you go again. He was shackled by his ankles and handcuffed to a seat as the jet was forced to make an emergency landing at the Republic of Ireland Shannon Airport. Passengers then saw him being led off the plane with his feet still bound and muttering to himself. He was taken by ambulance to a nearby psychiatric ward. All he wanted to do was talk to God. And his wife was at his side last night at the hospital as investigators sought to find out what triggered the drama at 35,000 feet over the Atlantic. Now, that's the part that makes me nervous as a prostitute in Sunday school, no offense to sex workers, 35,000 feet over the Atlantic. And this guy wants to talk to God. Wasn't that the same thing that the Egyptian pilot who crashed his jetliner and killed all those people, he wanted to talk to God too? And some of you people wonder why I'm an atheist. It says here, although the co-pilot would, in normal course of events, routinely fly and even land the Boeing 767-333, the bosses at Air Canada yesterday said that at no point, I tell you, had any of the 146 passengers on board, including three infants, been endangered. Oh, okay. Your co-pilot is screaming about wanting to talk to God and everybody's okay? No danger? One of the passengers on this flight from Toronto to Heathrow said the co-pilot was taken into the cabin in restraints in front of business class passengers 15 minutes before the aircraft began its descent. Passengers said he was very, very distraught. He was yelling loudly. He was swearing and asking for God. He wanted to talk to God. He wanted to talk to God, and he was telling God that the plane was low on fuel. A spokesman for Air Canada reminds everybody that commercial pilots must undergo checkups every 6 months. God looks baked, yeah. God smells good, yeah. What if God smoked cannabis? It's a bomb like some of us.
Whoa.
Your Day Screaming with Mike Malloy.
It's about 10 before the hour. Bill in Ottawa, Ontario. Is Ottawa in Ontario? Yeah, it's the capital, isn't it? Bill in Ottawa, Canada writes regarding the Air Canada pilot who heard the voices. Actually, we have several airlines. It's pretty clear to me what was going on with that pilot. He's planning on running for office in America. Or he's planning on invading Iraq. Isn't that what Bush said? He heard the voices telling him to do that? Regarding Iraq, according to Reuters now, and this is some serious stuff, more than a million Iraqis have died as a result of the conflict in their country since the U.S.-led invasion in 2003. That's only since 2003. Go back to 1991 and be shocked, be very shocked. But just starting with Bush Jr.'s adventure, this is according to research conducted by one of Britain's leading polling groups. The name of the company is Opinion Research Business. And they did this survey in face-to-face interviews with 2,414 adults. They found that 20% of people had had at least one death in their household as a result of the conflict, rather than natural causes, result of the conflict. Now, if you can either believe this and count on the polling company. The director of the polling group, Alan Hyde, said it had no objection whatsoever other than to record as accurately as possible the number of deaths among the Iraqi population as a result of the invasion and the resulting conflict. You can assume that this guy's a liar. You can assume that the Iraqi people stood there and lied and said, I had a cousin killed, I had a sister killed, I had a father killed. Why would they do that? We are as insulated as possible by American media and the American political class as to the death and destruction we have caused in that country. This is approaching Vietnam-level murder on our part. It really is. It really is. And this is horrifying. The moral imperative to stop this war. And I'm so sick of hearing these pundits talk about, and some of them on the left, that we now have an obligation. We broke it. We own it. We have to repair it. That is as insane as any argument I have heard. We need to begin withdrawing tomorrow and get out. The Iraqi people have been brutalized by the most vicious, powerful regime ever, and that is the government of the United States of America. We have slaughtered these people. A million deaths. A million. Back in 1997, the last complete census in Iraq found that 4.05 million households in the country. A figure that Opinion Research Business used to calculate that approximately 1.03 million people had died as a result of the war. The margin of error in the survey, which was just conducted in August and September, was 1.7%. That puts the range of Iraqi deaths between 946,000 and 1.12 million. Now, this research company originally found that 1.2 million people had died as a result of the war, but decided to go back and conduct more research in rural areas to make the survey as comprehensive as possible. And then they came up with a revised figure. They revised it down, 1 million. And the research covered 15 of Iraq's 18 provinces. Those that were not covered included two of Iraq's more volatile regions, Karbala and Anbar. Neither of those two provinces was covered. And the northern province of Arbil, where local authorities refused them a permit to do their work. A million Iraqi dead as a result of this war. Nearly 3,000 Americans, Brits, Canadian. Have the Canadians lost people there? I believe they have. Lots of countries in this filthy, disgusting term, coalition of the willing. Jesus, God. That's what Bush called the people the nations, the Italian, they've lost people. The Italians, did the French? I don't know. The French didn't go along. That's right. We dropped the word French fries from our vocabulary, didn't we? It's just unbelievable. The coalition of the willing have willingly killed 1 million Iraqi civilians. They're all civilians, every single one of them. Even the insurgents, so-called, are civilians. Because I'll tell you something, truth seeker. If some murderous, filthy regime, 1,000, 10,000 times more powerful than the United States, invaded us and did to us what we've done to Iraq, wouldn't you be on the street trying to murder the sons of bitches? I surely would. So would Kathy. So would everybody I know who's old enough to hold a weapon. And would we be considered insurgents? Yeah, you're damn right we would. They'd probably even call us something like Al-Qaeda, a term never used by Osama bin Laden prior to Bush's invasion. 1 million deaths just since... This is the Bush legacy. This blood-soaked little son of a bitch finally killed more people than his father. But you know what? He is, depending on which numbers you want to believe, George Jr. is still only in second place. Do you know who's in first? Who was the president of the United States when most of the deaths occurred in that country? Yeah, Bill Clinton. Depending on what figures you want to believe. But between George Herbert Walker Bush, Bill Clinton, and this diphthong who's there now, do you realize that we have slaughtered approximately, depending on whose number you, numbers you want to believe, 4 million people? And the hundreds of thousands of children that we have butchered like so much meat in that poor country. Remember what Madeleine Albright, who is so close to Hillary Clinton right now, they both probably share the same girdle. Remember what she said when she was asked, when she was Secretary of State, was the slaughter, the death of all these children worth it? And her answer was, yeah, I think it was, you evil bitch. This is what you and I have to understand, what we have done in Iraq. Welcome back, about 7 past the hour. Email here from Swamp Rat, a famous artist from New York. If you're not familiar with his work, you should be. Swamp Rat. He writes, way out, Mike and Kathy. What a sad day for America. First Dennis Kucinich and now John Edwards dropped out of the race. I guess that means they'll have to settle for less, like no health insurance, no job, no justice for the crimes perpetrated by the Bush regime against New Orleans, America, and the world. I know this may sound pessimistic, especially to those who are still comfy in their happy homes and not living in a house full of moldy, decaying walls and ceilings or living under the I-10 overpass. But come next November, we'll be voting for a Republican-like candidate just in order to stem the tide. Can there be any doubt that America is in decline? At this point, a corporate Democrat can only make the fall a little slower and a little less painless for the fortunate ones. But the alternative is worse. If insane McCain is handed the White House keys, then we will truly enter the Twilight Zone. Lord have mercy, Americans better duck and cover. They better hide their sons and daughters if that's possible, and prepare for perpetual war and the total economic collapse of this once great country. Now, if that sounded overly pessimistic, let me add this disclaimer. My fragile mind was warped after I saw troops occupying my city and Blackwater mercenaries skulking around my neighborhood. Peace from New Orleans. Swamp Rat. And Bridget writes in, then we're going to move on. Mike, I used to be puzzled when the candidates that seemed the cleanest, most dedicated, and the most honest did not find the support they needed from the public they truly sought to serve. I'm a little too old to be puzzled anymore. Now I'm just sad. With Edwards, as with all too many before him, speaking the truth sealed his fate. He had no time for the corporatocracy. He made it clear that it would not be business as usual for the power elite under his leadership. And the corporate media moguls made sure that he got as little coverage as possible to spread his vision. I guess that explains why so many of those whose lives would have been enriched by an Edwards presidency, who would have had a champion for their lives in the White House, instead have responded to the Democratic primary campaign as though it were American Idol. I will undoubtedly vote for Obama, and if she is the nominee, I will even hold my nose and vote for Hillary, because the fear of even one more right-wing nut job on the Supreme Court makes my skin crawl and gives me nightmares. But I, like you, am sad that I didn't get a chance to vote for the person I really believed in. But what else is new? Maybe Edwards made a deal with Clinton and Obama to be Attorney General? I'll keep my head above water with that thought. Bridget. We're going to come to your calls here in just a second. The number is 800-989-1480. This was at Think Progress. Did you know that Dick Cheney has a piece of the house where Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, who was another one of the number two guys in Iraq, there have been seven, eight, or nine number two guys, al-Qaeda guys in Iraq, in a cover story on how Bush decided on the surge, the Weekly Standard's truly certifiable maniac, Fred Barnes. This guy is beyond crazy. I'm sure he eats children's arms and legs for afternoon snacks. This guy is insane. He declared that, quote, it's clear the surge has been a success, end quote, and he noted that Cheney has a gruesome souvenir from Iraq. This is what Fred Barnes wrote. The week before Camp David, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the al-Qaeda leader in Iraq, had been killed. Cheney has a piece of the house where Zarqawi died on display at his residence. Son of a bitch. You know, I get emails from people that say, you know, you're equating Bush and Cheney to zombies and eaters of dead flesh is a bit over the top. Not a whole lot, but a bit. Really? You think so? You know, Bush has a souvenir from the war, too. A pistol that Saddam allegedly was clutching when U.S. soldiers pulled him from his hideout in December 2003, if you believe that story. So there were some comments at thinkprogress.org about this little bit of macabre news. First one says, you know who else kept souvenirs? Yeah. This one says, I sure am glad that thousands of soldiers and Iraqis died. Over $1 trillion have been spent so that these two, and I can't use the word, these two blanks could get their souvenirs. This poster writes, wonder what piece of the house he's got. Maybe the toilet? This one writes, what pathetic, impotent men. And I love this one. I want a piece of Bush's flight suit and one of the secret inner office documents that Cheney stamped after they're gone. Yeah. Cheney has a piece of Zarqawi's house? I mean, what that is so primeval, isn't it? That is so, shake a bone in somebody's face and put a curse on them. It is bizarre. I'm surprised that Cheney doesn't have a piece of Zarqawi's body. When you get him, cut off something. I don't care, a finger, a piece of meat off his thigh, A toe. I'll take a toe. Get me a toe. Put it in a bottle of formaldehyde and send it over here. Give it to Bolton. He'll bring it to me. Speaking of John Bolton, another just total, full-blown, brain-dead psychopath. Since that NIE, that National Intelligence Estimate on Iran, said the country halted its nuclear weapons program in 2003, Bolton has been making every attempt to get the United States to go ahead and bomb Iran, either conventionally or with nuclear weapons. Doesn't matter to this rat bastard. The other day on Fox News, Bolton said Iran's mullahs want a Democratic president elected in 2008 over here so that they can continue to pursue building a nuclear weapon. Boy, I'd like to spend about an uninterrupted 10 minutes with John Bolton someplace. You know, I really would. I really would. I'd like to talk to him. Responding to Bush's State of the Union remark that he will confront Iran if necessary, Bolton said Bush must either change the regime in Tehran or the possible use of force against Iran before his term expires. Bolton explained that this must be done to halt Iran's civilian nuclear enrichment program. And, of course, this is very reminiscent of the psychopath conservative Republican strategy around the 2006 elections. Remember, at that time, Joe Lieberman and Dick Cheney and Bush all suggested al-Qaeda was hoping for a Democratic Congress. God, I hate these people. Have I mentioned yet tonight how much, how deeply? And then there's this. Then we're going to come to some phone calls here. Jack wrote this. McCain's nomination, and everybody's of the opinion now that it's just a matter of time before McCain is the Republican nominee. McCain's nomination means Hillary will lose because she can't attack his huge vulnerability on the war. Jack writes, heads up everyone, McCain's apparent victory means that if the Democrats choose Hillary, it would be suicidal because the Iraq war issue is then neutralized since she is on the same page as McCain. Obama is therefore the one who can beat him on the two key issues because he is superior on the war and he understands economic issues, whereas McCain, by his own admission, knows very little about economics. And Jack adds, it would seem that Republican angst is effectively over. By next week, they will have virtually crowned John McCain as America's great hope. Then they'll have 9 full months to frame the contest versus the shorter general election schedule of the Democrats, who will carry their internal bickering into March, or perhaps even April. Yeah, I'm starting to get an uncomfortable feeling. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
Resistance Radio with Mike Malloy.
The hour. Let's do some phone calls here. We'll start with Southside Carl, who's calling from Chicago, listening on the internet. Carl, where have you been?
Yeah, how you doing, Mike?
I'm doing all right.
Oh, I have to get up too early in the morning to take the wife to work. I'd be knocked out usually by this time.
Oh, that's right. You told me that once before. How you doing? Everything okay?
Yeah, we're okay here.
That's
How
good.
You been?
I'm doing fine, given all the circumstances. Yeah, we're doing all right.
Okay. Yeah, I had watched the debate tonight, and I couldn't believe John McCain is like, hey, I salute every day, make me president.
Right.
But I saw the thing where Edwards said that he was pulling out.
Uh-huh.
Let me say this, Mike. It's time, and especially, you know, given the economy right now,
mm-hmm.
this is the time when people should be. I understand what part of his message was, but right now it's the time when people should be not talking so much about the stimulus, but actually talking about the failure of conservative economics.
Mm-hmm.
And this is basically what's gotten us to where we're at now.
Sure.
Ever since Ronald Reagan, we've been basically following the same type of economics. So tax cuts, mm-hmm. benefits for business, benefits for business. And it's the same cycle. And someone needs to start pointing out, you know, making an evaluation. How have, you know, when they asked McCain, well, Reagan said, well, are you better off than you were however many years it was before.
Right, right.
And Stupid said, well, yeah, America is better off. You know, come on.
Mm-hmm.
Let's people need to start making an evaluation. I mean, we're in more debt. We got more people in poverty. All of their tax cuts has been made to divided between a wealth division in the country much, much wider.
Mm-hmm.
We got more people in poverty. People who at the bottom end, they've basically been squares and squares, and they've not realized anything. Wages have been stagnant. Bush promised that, the economy is going to grow 4%+, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It never materialized. The jobs never materialized like what they said. You know, this conservative policy, it is just a mess. It's a failure. And the thing is, people, especially Democrats, need to understand, you have to start talking about these things early.
Yeah, and, but if what you're saying is true, Carl, and I certainly think it is, why do people still keep voting for Republicans? I'm not talking about voting them into office because they steal the elections, but most of the theft is less than 10% of the vote, which, my understanding, less than 10% of the vote, which will swing some of these close contests. So why do people keep voting for Republicans, especially the so-called working poor, the working class, the middle class? Why?
Well, what happened with Reagan and them is that conservatives, they used time to help brainwash this in a way, but they use time, a continuing message of, well, it's your money, it's not the government's money. The whole thing about, well, they're taking your money in taxes. They, you know, and it's the continual thing where they made it part of people's mindset, whether it's true or not. They repeated that. It's the repetition of it where people just, well, that's what they tuned in and heard.
Right. Well, that theory of the big lie, that goes back to Nazi Germany, literally. If you say the big lie enough times,
yeah,
and you have the media behind you saying it also, eventually people start to believe it. But that still doesn't preclude the fact that most people, wouldn't you think, should just do basic checking out to make sure that what they're hearing is true?
Well, you would think that, you know, people would do that. But a lot of people
don't.
They're not in touch. They're not engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And so just that broad message that's been out there, that's what they tune in on. And that's why I say that, well, liberals and progressive-minded people, they should be making this an issue. You know, the stimulus, that's something, but the whole thing is the fundamentally, well, why? I mean, mm-hmm. in this stimulus package, they're still talking about, well, oh, we have to have some incentive for business. I mean, what was these incentives for? If, you know, if
right.
they were working, well, we wouldn't be in this position.
I don't, right.
You know, It's not a difficult thing, the argument to make, but unfortunately, I don't know, you know, what people of influence are thinking when they can't pick, you know, pick up on the obvious argument to start making, to start getting people to recognize that, well, hey, this, what they've been about hasn't worked.
And I hear you. I hear you. Carl, I got to leave there, man. It's time for a break. Listen, don't be so... so much a stranger calling once in a while, okay?
All right, then, Mike.
All right, man. Take care. Okay. Take care. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio.
How much he hates these people. It's more Mike Malloy.
Yeah, way up to here. 25 before the hour. RawStory.com had it the other day about McCain shocking observers on Sunday, this last Sunday, when he told a crowd of supporters, quote, "There's going to be other wars. I'm sorry to tell you, there's going to be other wars. We will never surrender, but there will be other wars." Jesus, why don't you say it three times, insane McCain? And then I think the next day, MSNBC's Joe Scarborough asked old-line conservative Pat Buchanan about McCain's remarks. Scarborough said he talked about promising that more wars were coming. Is he so desperate to get off the economic issue? That was Joe Scarborough's question. Buchanan replied that McCain never used the word promise, but simply said there would be more wars, and that from McCain's point of view, quote, "That is straight talk. You get John McCain in the White House, and I do believe we will be at war with Iran," end quote. Buchanan went on, quote, "That's one of the things that makes me very nervous about him. There's no doubt John McCain is going to be a war president. His whole career is wrapped up in the military, national security. He's in Putin's face. He's threatened the Iranians. We're going to be in Iraq 100 years, end quote. Then Scarborough said, "So when he says more war, he is promising you, if he gets in the White House, we'll not only be fighting this war, but starting new wars. Is that what conservative Republicans want?" And Buchanan answered, quote, "I don't say he's starting them. He expects more wars. I think he's talking straight, because if you take a look at the McCain foreign policy, he is in everybody's face. Did you see Thad Cochran's comment when he endorsed Romney? He said, look, John McCain is a bellicose, red-faced, angry guy who constantly explodes," end quote. And then Scarborough added the typical right wing, because Scarborough is such a right winger. Scarborough says, "Well, that's not a happy message. It's not Reagan-esque." Not Reagan-esque. Oh. And I wonder how much more of Joe Scarborough Mika Brzezinski is going to put up with on Morning Joe before she picks up her microphone and beats the son of a bitch dead. I have great respect for Mika Brzezinski sitting there morning after morning, while this self-referential creep, he's almost as bad, not quite, almost as bad as Tweety Bird, but he interrupts Mika Brzezinski, who probably has forgotten more actual foreign policy facts than Joe Scarborough will ever know. Scarborough was, what, a member of Congress from the Florida Panhandle. Woo! Yeah, that's God's country, all right. Another one here from Bill regarding souvenirs. Subject line said, "Bin Laden's head, comma, dry ice." Mike, they've all been at this for a while. The CIA cut off Che Guevara's hands and sent them back to Washington. More recently, Kofor Black of the CIA literally wanted Bin Laden's head. And here's the quote. This is from CNN.com, yada, 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 quote, "I want Bin Laden's head shipped back in a box filled with dry ice. I want to be able to show Bin Laden's head to the president. I promised him I would do that," end quote. Kofor Black. And Bill writes, "Normally I would have some pithy remarks on this, but Jesus, Mike, what is there to say about that?" Yeah, I'd forgotten about that. That goes back a few years, doesn't it? Yeah, a couple of years ago. These are sick, cowardly, war-loving, capitalist suckers who just they love to make statements like that, but give them a rifle, and tell them that they're going to go one-on-one with an Al-Qaeda member. How's that? There is no such thing as Al-Qaeda, as far as I'm concerned. Give Kofor Black a rifle and put him on the street in Fallujah and tell all the so-called insurgents that this freak is going to come over, and all they can do is send out one rifle-armed insurgent, and then just see what happens. Kofor Black would pee all over himself. He would be so terrified. So would all these right-wingers, all of these war lovers. They love war as long as someone else fights it. Disgusting punks. Bob writes, the percentage of deaths in war in World War I, the civilian deaths in war, World War I, 10%, World War II, 50%, Vietnam, 70%. Iraq, 90%. Percentage of civilian deaths in war. Matthew is calling from Bedford, Texas, listening on the internet. Hey, Matthew, how you doing?
Hey, Mike. Your voice is coming out of my radio right now.
Oh, that's right. Are you listening to the Dallas-Fort Worth station?
Yes, I am.
Hallelujah.
Praise Jesus.
And where exactly? I don't mean don't give us a street address, but where do you live? Where's Bedford?
Actually, it's a lot of people know what DFW Airport is, Dallas Fort Worth Airport.
Right.
We're really close to that. We're within driving distance. It's called the Mid Cities. First deal is Bedford, so yeah.
How's the reception on our new Dallas affiliate?
It's AM, so naturally it sucks.
It fades in and out, huh?
Well, yeah. Well, it was kind of funny because I knew you were going to be on radio, and I was just kind of flipping through the channels, and I found it, and I looked at the information on the channel. It's a business channel.
Yeah, it does mostly business news, I think. And we are on there now. There's a program on right before us for an hour, and a program right after us for an hour. I think it's also political talk, and from the progressive liberal point of view, and then we're right in the middle of that for 3 hours live. And I don't mean to use up your time here talking about the radio station, but we are so glad to be on the air in Dallas-Fort Worth, and I am glad you're listening on the radio. Isn't that cool?
Yeah, it is. I mean, Jesus, Mike, we don't even have Air America here.
I know.
Here you are. But what I really called about was really just, I went to bed last night, and I was so happy that Giuliani was coming out. And I wake up this morning, and my very liberal-minded mother kind of walks in the room, and she simply says, Edwards is dropping out of the race. And, you know, one of the worst things about having hope is that when it's ripped away from you, it feels like somebody's jabbing a barbed dagger in you. And, you know, John Edwards was one of the very few candidates that I decided to put my hopes in, because really, I mean, I'm not really that confident in the Democratic Party in general, but I mean, he just was one of the people who spoke to me. And when I was in North Carolina, I called you from North Carolina, I actually stopped by the campaign headquarters, and, you know, I got to talk to some people, and I actually spent about 4 hours on the phone bank there, so I put in time for him, and he's dropping out, and, you know, first it was Kucinich, then it was Gore deciding he wasn't going to run, and then, you know, now it's Edwards. And I think what we're seeing now is a systematic collapse of hopes, you know. And, you know, I'm happy for the Obama supporters and that their guy's still in, and I'm indifferent to the Clinton supporters, because they've just been some of the most obnoxious people I've encountered in terms of their support for Hillary and attacking me personally for supporting somebody else. But, you know, I'm a very young person, as you know. I'm 18, and I'm supposed to have optimism. And if I can't have optimism, I mean, I was listening to you talking how these monsters, they're trying to get souvenirs. I mean, I have so many things to say, but I just got to say, you know, when it starts getting to the point that I start feeling something in my being start, I don't know, pride away from me mm-hmm. after all what's going on here. What can I do except just sit and stare and think and hope, whatever's left of hope, whatever's, you know, left after being burnt off. And, you know, I cannot live in America with a President McCain. And thankfully, I can probably sign up for an internship over in Japan. I'm going to be going back to Japan this year anyway, but I can sign up for an internship. But I can't live here under another Republican because I will either be drafted, either that, or I will be sent off to a camp because of my political beliefs, or I'm going to end up entering politics, God forbid. And, you know, I know a lot of people can't do it, and I won't be able to do it either.
Well, those are, you know, as I sit here and listen to you, I'm trying to remember when I was 18, the choices that I had around the issues you're talking about. And, of course, we had the overarching thing of the Soviet Union, the United States, and nuclear bombs. But Vietnam really hadn't kicked in yet. It was in the planning stages. There was stuff going on in the background. But, I didn't have to think about that stuff. When I was 18, I was trying to figure out about going to the University of Toledo, how I was going to be able to afford to do that. I wound up with a scholarship, but because my parents were poor, and there were six of us in the family, yada, yada, yada. But I had those issues. I faced issues that were just about me. They weren't these overarching things that you and people in your age group have to face. And I just, Matthew, I don't know what to say. There's nothing I can say that would affect what you have to do one way or the other. But I am glad you called in. All right, man, take care. Stay in touch, all right?
Will do.
All right, Matthew.
Glad to have you back here.
All right. Yeah, we're glad to be on the air there. Take care, Matthew. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
De partir n'importe où, bras dessus, bras dessous, en chantant des chansons, c'est si bon de se dire des mots doux.
No subliminal messages for you to misunderestimate. It's Mike Malloy. He's commonsensical.
I always ask you when you play C'est si bon by the little French singer, but why are you playing it this time?
Because it's Wednesday.
Okay. 10 before the hour, back to your phone calls. Arnold is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Arnold.
Hey, man, how you doing, man?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm doing great. Good to talk to you again, man. You know, I didn't realize, because I've been to Phoenix a couple times. I'm driving to Phoenix now.
Uh-huh.
And you know, I've seen this billboard this summer and this fall. It had a picture of Bush on it, and it said, had enough? And it said how you pronounce it again?
KPHX. Yeah, those are our signs. We have a bunch of them up around Phoenix. And
man, that sign, when I first saw that sign back in the fall, I killed myself laughing. I almost ran off the road. I said, you damn right, I had enough.
Well,
my God, man, I'll tell you.
Let me ask you, Arnold, do they light them up at night, or do we not have, they do, they are lit?
Yeah, they're lit at night. I was right beside I-10 I was on.
Damn, we got enough money for nighttime lighting. All right, I'm glad to hear that.
Well, I mean, I don't know if it was directly lit for that purpose, but
don't back down. Don't leave me now. Don't leave me.
Well, I was able to read it from the highway here this time of night.
Well, then it was lit.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed that, man. I wish I could. I should have stopped to the picture of it. You know,
Uh-huh. No, I've seen them. Our CEO, John, sent me a picture. They're great. I love them.
And he's got Bush on it. He's looking like a fool, man.
Doesn't he?
Look like a little boy that pooped his pants, you know?
had enough. Yeah.
Listen. Right. There was a guy, I listened to Mark Thompson's show tonight on the series. Uh-huh. It comes on before you come on.
Right.
And he was interviewing this guy called, his name was Glenn Ford. I'm trying to think of his website, Black something.
The Black Avenger?
No, it's, I forgot what the name it was, man. But he was talking about the website he just put up in his blog uh-huh. he put down.
Uh-huh.
Man, it was very interesting. He was describing how bad the Democratic Party has fell into a pit of being self-pity, and they can't do anything. The Republicans are going to beat them on every hand. Every time they try to do anything, the Republicans are always sitting there waiting for them to count.
Uh-huh.
And it's going to be it's a sad fact that we're never going to be able to get out of this thing because there's nobody in control that's got any kind of, you know, cojones to do anything, you know? It's just, it's a crying shame. It's like that, you know?
Yeah, that is very, very irritating to me to realize that the Democratic Party leadership is you're right, or this guy you're listening to is right. They've just kind of lost their spirit, their spine, their backbone. And the Republicans just let the Democrats in the House or the Senate try to resist something. The Republicans, it's almost like they stand up and say, sit down and shut up or I will come over there and kick your ass.
That's right.
And the Democrat just always says, okay, I'm sorry, I don't want an ass kicking. Okay. Rather than saying, if you want to get ass, you got to bring ass. You know what
That's
I'm saying?
Right.
And,
That's
and
right.
I can't understand why Democrats have become wimpish. I agree with it. It makes no sense to me, Arnold.
You know, you were talking about that guy, what's that guy say, so you want to spend 10 minutes with him? Alone, what was his name?
Bolton? Was it Bolton?
Oh, yeah, Bolton. Yeah. Bolton. You know, I grew up in Baltimore, right? And I always say, yeah, come on with me. I'm going to give you one of them East Baltimore ass whoopers. So I guess you will give him a East Toledo ass whooper with you. Listen, I'll tell you one thing I will say. I give Nancy Pelosi credit for the other night when she was sitting behind Bush in that thing because I was watching this and listening to your show at the same time.
Yeah.
While you critiqued the whole thing.
Right.
And Nancy was sitting back there looking down most of the night, you know.
She had a book or a magazine in her hand.
Right, but thank God she didn't have that big treatment of Botox on her face or that Joker smile on her face, you know. You know, that kind of smile, she'd be smiling all the time. And
yeah.
While Bush be talking about it, if you send me a bill, I'll veto it immediately. Don't you dare do anything like that. I mean, they just sit there and take that.
And then
I saw members of the CBC run over there when the man was leaving the room to get an autograph. Oh, I was just sick when I saw that, man.
Yeah, I know. I don't understand why congressional Black Caucus members even want this guy to touch him. You know, if I were one of those folks, I swear this is true. I swear it is. I would turn my back on him. And I don't understand, that's another thing, black or white, I don't understand why Democrats, when these filthy Republicans leap to their feet and applaud the garbage coming out of this man's mouth, why don't the Democrats just one time stand up and turn their backs? Is there some rule or some law? Would that be breaking some etiquette? This son of a bitch took us into a war where 1 million people have died in Iraq and 3,000 American soldiers are dead. What does it take? I don't know anymore. Arnold, I got to leave it there.
Okay, buddy.
Thanks
we'll
for checking
we'll
in.
We'll talk to you later.
All right, drive safely. I appreciate you checking in. Wouldn't that be a hell of a statement? Wouldn't that finally push Rush Limbaugh right over the edge? You know, it would take Rush Limbaugh's heart that is just coagulated with all those fat globules. You see every once in a while now, you see him on the video. On his in-studio video, at least when he was a drug addict, he was thin. But now he's porked up again, and you can just imagine his heart inside there, just like he destroyed his ears or his inner ear. His cochlear nerve, I'm sorry, his inner ear, his inner Republican, whatever. You just know that Limbaugh's, the arteries to Limbaugh's heart, probably about one-tenth the opening they should have. And if that would happen, if all the Democrats would just stand up and turn their backs on Bush, on one of those State of the Union addresses that this turkey had, Limbaugh would just, you know, clutch and keel over, and there goes the excellence in broadcasting network, right? Oh, God, I can dream, can't I? We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Yeah, I know you were waiting for the Moody Blues to open this hour, right? Gotcha. You got a good email here from, I want you to check out this guy's MySpace, myspace.com/junglyss, JUNGLYSS. You got to check out a great, great MySpace site, Junglyss, JUNGLYSS. Check him out. But here's what he wrote. He's in Chicago. This is what he wrote regarding my question about why the working class vote Republican. And he writes, Mike, you asked why some people continually support Republicans even though it's not in their best interest. With all that has gone on for the past 7 years, one has to wonder why any working class person in this country would even listen to any Republican candidate at all. I have a theory about that. I feel there are three groups when dealing with Republicans. Group one. I like to call them the NASCAR Archie Bunker Republicans. These are usually working class people, middle, lower middle, and poor. Though they can't stand each other because of their stupid geographical differences, the one thing they have in common is race. Yes, these are usually the racist people who blame all of their shortcomings on the other, usually African American or Latino. Like I said, the NASCAR Archie Bunker Republicans can't stand each other, but they love a party that they feel will screw the other first. No matter how much job loss, how much environmental crimes where they reside, or tax cuts for the rich, Group 1 feels that the white man is the right man. It's been said, however, that hatred is like taking poison and expecting everyone else to die. I'm sorry. If ever the phrase, cut off your nose to spite your face, applies, it's here with Group 1. Group 2, the wannabe Republicans. This group is usually comprised of, quote, ethnic minorities and African Americans, end quote. I would say a few names, but I'm sure we all know a few on television. These people are the worst, in my opinion, because they are self-loathing blanks. They hate their origin and do everything in their power not to accept who or what they are, or that so out of reach, quote, pat on the head, end quote. A good example is HUD Secretary Alfonso Jackson. Excuse me. They live under the illusion that if they believe as Republicans believe, then they are one of them. No. Even if their wives wear pearls, they are not Republicans. They don't fit in. It doesn't work. Can they make decisions for the Republican Party that would possibly influence the direction of said party? No. Even if their children wear black and white Oxford shoes, they are not Republicans. They don't really fit in. Group three. These are the real Republicans. White men with incomes of $350,000 to infinity, based on who's getting screwed this week. Chip and Ernie hairstyles, so-called black Republicans, need not apply. Corks inserted in areas I won't discuss here, and usually power-hungry at anyone's, including their own, Republican brethren, expense, and a preferably blonde, sexually repressed, pearl-wearing wife. These people use religion, firearms, and hatred of gays as a bargaining chip. They wear their patriotism on their lapels and also seem to be sexually repressed or closeted homosexuals. More important, they have mucho contempt for groups 1 and 2, except during election time. Interestingly enough, they have even more hatred for Group 1 because Group 1 is a reflection of what they could be if ever the bottom falls out. See the Jerry Springer Show. They actually wish that Group 1 didn't exist except during election time. Group 2 could, however, one day be their servants, so they need them. Their contempt for these groups negate the notion that Groups 1 and 2 even exist, but God bless them for existing. Mike, maybe I'm just crazy and all these Republican people are right. So tell Kathy to play Ship of Fools, because I feel like that's what we've all been on for the past 7 years. Blessings and respect, and thank you, Mike, for being crazy with me. That's a good letter. Junglus, check out his MySpace, myspace.com/JUNGLYSS. Good website. I went there during the break. And Bob, our resident philosopher, wrote essentially the same thing. He said, why do people vote Republican and in doing so vote against their interests? The common denominator in every Republican I know is racism. It seems to white out everything else. I'm continually amazed that well-educated, people in my circle of acquaintances will pull off their Mission Impossible faces, and there stands a racist across the board. Yeah, I think that's the... true. But still, is race hatred, is hatred of people of color or gay folk or liberated women so deep that these folks that were described here by our man in Chicago, that these folks would vote on and on and on against their own economic self-interest? Their own self-interest where it concerns their few remaining liberties in this country. They would vote against their own self-interest where it concerns how the world perceives us, and that matters. A lot of people say, screw them. I don't care how anybody looks at me. I'm an American. No, that's wrong. That's a wrong attitude. That's just a wrong attitude. And to answer my own question, yeah, the bigotry where it concerns minorities, so-called, or gay folk, so-called, or, you know, whoever it is, easiest to demonize. Yeah, that's such a powerful thing, isn't it? I'll put out my own eye before I will ever vote for a black man. There's an awful lot of whites in the South. I'm sure they're up north, too, out west, you know, blah, blah, blah. Awful lot of whites in the South, though, who feel that way. I will put out my own eye. Awful lot of Christian conservatives, white or black, who say, I will take off my left arm before I ever vote for a woman. The problem is, what I mentioned in one of the emails tonight, I read one of the emails tonight, this is probably the wrong time for the Democratic Party to put forward candidates who are going to, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, who are going to trigger that kind of bigotry and prejudice and woman hatred in the electorate. I don't know. Or, on the other hand, you know, that's such a cynical point of view. It really is. What I just said is a very cynical point of view. You know, I watch these crowds, especially for Barack Obama. He was someplace, when was it, Kathy, tonight? And it wasn't in California. It was someplace where the venue in which he spoke, I think held, I'm just guessing here, I just know the numbers impress me, held 6,000 or 7,000 people, and like 9,000 were crowded in, or 16,000 were crowded in, there was thousands more outside. Every time I see video footage of Barack Obama addressing a group, I see just a hellacious amount of white faces, all kinds of white people. So maybe, now, here's the thing that is so pissy in America. Barack Obama is as white as he is black. Does anybody else care about that? You know, he has a white mother and a black father, but we call him black because of the one drop rule. You know, anybody in this country that has any Negro blood in them, it doesn't make any difference. It doesn't make any difference. And there is no such thing as Negro blood. You know what I'm talking about. That little genetic thing. And the really pissy thing, if you have studied any kind of anthropology, you know that that's where the whole thing began, in Africa, right? Oh, I get so tired of talking about this. But Barack Obama, you know, he's white. Well, okay, he's black. No, he's white. No, he's black. No, he's white. No, he's black. No, he's white. Where do you draw the line? In this society, you draw the line on hair texture, skin color. That's where you draw the line. Barack Obama, we don't consider him to be a white man, and he's got a white mother. We call him a black man because he's got a black father. Jesus, God, you talk about going schizophrenic and nuts and crazy and out of your mind and freaked and bad. Let's do a break. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M. Ah!
It's time for your humble and obedient servant, more of Mike Malloy.
I know why. Crazy on a ship of fools. Oh, crazy.
It's about 22 past the hour. Let's go back to your phone calls here real quick. Dr. Dave has been holding on for an hour and a half. Dr. Dave, welcome to the program.
Good to be listening to you all night, Mike. I like it.
Yeah, well, Dr. Day, by the way, is in the radio biz. He is a co-host of a show that's on Sunday mornings on KPHX at 8 o'clock local time.
Yeah, you know, that we try to cut through all this crap just like you, and you know what?
What?
That young caller you had earlier, he says, what am I supposed to do? We didn't give him an answer.
Well, that's true.
I mean, you said I'm willing to vote for Barack. Now, we both know that McCain and Clinton's and, you know, the whole conspiracy, the only difference between Democrats and Republicans is that Democrats are corrupt in the millions and Republicans are corrupt in the billions. Otherwise, they're all playing the same game, right?
Yeah.
And we're caught up in it. And it is a crime. And you know what? Someone should make a movie. Maybe people will go watch that. Maybe there should be a commercial doing the Super Bowl because you've got 100 billion people around the world that are going to watch that. That'd be good advertising.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. Yeah. All right. Well, so what would you tell Matthew, our 18-year-old listener, who, by the way, has been listening to this program in various forms since he was, what, 12, Kathy? 12 or 13? It was when he started calling. What advice would you give him?
Well, you know, he has to get involved with a political candidate and that will bring change. Should he run for local office and be an honest, uncorrupt candidate from the bottom rung of the ladder all the way to when he's about 50, when he can become a senator of his state, possibly? I mean, is that his only, I mean, I'm part of the Green Party, and, you know, I'm going to go vote for Cynthia McKinney, or should I go vote in the primary and change it to Obama to keep, you know, the regime change going in this country? You know, it's got to be something.
Well, here's the problem I have with what you just said. All right, Matthew. Okay, if he wants to know what he can do, yeah, he can wait, run for office. You know.
Well, he's got to vote now. I'm saying he's got to pick a side.
Right. He can, and he can try to affect change 32 years from now if that's possible. But what about the other 100 million people who don't know what the hell to do right now? There are 150 million, at least half of the population of this country. I would assume, I hope, are not total lemmings, not total drones, although the figure may be a lot less than that. So,
yeah,
so
at dinner at my house, at my parents' house, you get the McCain and Giuliani speech looking at all the Bush holiday cards on the mantle. I mean, come on. How'd you like to be in that environment?
No.
Love you, Dad. You know, good to
no.
see you.
No, I was very grateful that my mother, bless her heart, up until the time she died at 89, 2 years ago, was a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat progressive who no more would have gone for George Bush than she would have gone for the rat poison. So I don't know what it's like to be in a family where, the kid, no matter how old the kid is, and the parents have this kind of unspoken disagreement politically.
You know what my mom asked me the other day?
What?
Why are you such a conspiracy theorist?
Yeah, well.
and she's like, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? I'm like, you know what? I have some nice patients. They have this nice radio show. I'm going to go on there, and we're going to try to motivate people to figure out who to vote for.
Yeah.
Is that our best bet? I had a patient the other day. He voted early. You know who he voted for in Illinois? He voted for Edwards.
Yeah, well, that's probably what I'm going to do here in not early voting, but it's probably what I'm going to do in the Super Tuesday.
But he's not running, so that's once again. I mean, I was voting for Kucinich. You know, he had to dump out because the DNC
right.
is running a candidate against him.
Right.
Bye, Dennis. We don't want you around anymore. I mean, that's not fair.
I know.
You know, why can't we put him in the cabinet somewhere?
Well, Kucinich, you're right. One of the reasons he dropped out is because the Democratic National Committee is threatening to, and not threatening, they are running someone against him to take his seat that he's held for how long?
Well, he must be dirty or something. I don't know. What's going on, Dennis? Something to admit to?
Yeah,
the Democratic National Committee, they're coming in to clean up town.
Yeah, they always do.
Yes. In fact, we've got here our own 10th district. We've got an incumbent Republican, Mark Kirk, and we had Dan Seals from the get-go, who's the son of a football player from the Bears. He picked up 53-47, and now we've got a true believer, Clintonite, running in the primary against him.
Mm-hmm.
And they did a straw poll out here, which is kind of fun, and he came up that Seals was at 150, and the Footlick was at about 50. So
huh.
It's about 3-1.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, maybe that's a change. But then again, you know, who's the corrupt? They were saying before, members of the Freemasons or the Council on Foreign Relations. I mean, every president has been a member of the Bohemian Club, the Bilderberger.
Right,
I mean,
right.
How do I get in? Do I have to be invited? Can I just show up?
Yeah, you just show up.
Just show up.
Show up and take off all your clothes. They'll let you right in.
Oh, yeah, perfect.
Dr. Dave, thanks, man. We got
to
boogie.
You.
All right, take all right, care. Take care.
Soon.
All right, we'll talk again. Dr. Dave is a dentist. And I don't know if he's he's a doctor of dental science. He may be a endodontist or something. Who knows? Anyway, good to hear from Dr. Dave. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
It's more Mike Malloy.
Oh, yeah, they tremble in their boots, don't they, Kathy? All right, on this Republican, the groups that vote Republican that our friend in Chicago got that conversation started, this comes from Canada, and I won't say the name tonight because the emailer is a regular. And the subject line is, one more group that votes Republican. Arg, I hate to say it, my very own cultural group, though let me emphasize I'm an atheist and definitely not a Zionist. They vote Republican in the states and conservative here in Canada because they believe wrongly, of course, that these parties are good for Israel. I can't stand it. I can't believe my ears every time I hear it. An old family friend a few months ago, when I told her I never visit my mom in the states because George Bush is president, answered with, "But he's good for Israel." My brother-in-law, whom I could happily strangle for many other reasons, voted for the stupid conservative party for the same reason. Better not say my name tonight. Okay, I hear you. And this from Tom in the Joshua Tree, Republican versus the Liberal Brain. Tom writes, MRIs have shown that there is a physiological difference between a Republican Christian and a real Homo sapien. When researchers at UCLA asked socially relevant questions to a Republican Christian, a small pin spot at the base of the brain lights up, whereas the liberal or Homo sapien brain will light up in the frontal cortex like a Christmas tree. So it's not really a political or racist or bigot issue. These are just symptoms. It's simply the difference between a parallel species occupying the same geography but with a far less brain function. Very similar to the difference between a Cro-Magnon and a Homo sapien, which explains why those fools do not believe in evolution or gravity or peace. Tom in Joshua Tree, California. You guys are just too cool with your emails. You really are. Back to your phone calls. Paula is calling from Bayonne, New Jersey. Paula, who sends me all those crazy emails. Hey, Paula, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. How are you tonight?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm sad.
You're sad?
I'm very, very sad. I woke up this morning and couldn't believe. It was such a shock that John Edwards...
About Edwards?
Yeah.
Yeah, they started telling us, what, about 7:30 this morning, and then he made the announcement this afternoon, yeah.
And it's just... You know what I mean? Like, we're left with a choice now. We have two... It, I mean, it's wonderful that, you know, we have a woman and an African-American who are vying for the thing, but unfortunately, they're not saying the things we want them to say.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, here we have, the Republican Party was on its deathbed. It was ready to go down in flames.
Right.
They were just, I mean, did you see, their debates, the crackpots they had? My God, they were like zombies.
I know.
Like a Mistathorazine pageant every time they were all together, you know, on the stage.
Yes.
And then, you know what I mean? So we had a chance to finally kill the myth that they perpetuated about liberals, about progressives.
Mm-hmm.
Because one thing Bush did was prove conservatism a failure.
It has to fail.
If
further proof was needed. Anybody who takes the time, and I realize we're in the United States and very few people here have any sense of their political history, much less their cultural history, but if anyone would take a look back, conservatism failed from the very beginning. It failed. It is a failed political philosophy that continues to bring heartache and families ruptured and wars and death and destruction and pain and misery. And yet Americans keep voting for Republicans / conservatives. I don't get it. It's a failed philosophy.
Well, you know what it is? It's because Democrats a long time ago, and I don't know if they did it willfully or if it's just planning, bought into the myth.
Some Democrats, yeah.
A lot, you know what I mean? Where it became the thing where, like, no, I can't say I'm liberal. No, it was something they ran away from. And now, like, you have the perfect opportunity to say, look what happened. Do you want this again? Or do you want to clean it up?
Yeah, yeah.
And they didn't. And now we have, you know what I mean? Hillary, who's Hillary? You know what I mean? Dealing with Hillary, it's like borrowing a money from a guy in a sharkskin suit named Meatballs. You pretty much know what you're going to get. And then you have Barack Obama, who I really, really want to support. I mean, I really want to support him. But he just has this fondness for right-wing talking points. The Reagan stuff. The pandering to religion, you know, conflating morality with religion.
Yeah.
And, you know, the Donnie McClurkin thing, the ex-gay gospel singer.
Mm-hmm.
And the other guy from Texas who we you know?
Sure.
Who's supporting, accepted, and I'm like, no, you don't have to go there. And that bothers me. That really bothers me. So now we're stuck with a choice. You know what I mean? Do I want, it's like having to choose between pink eye and a yeast infection. And who wants either?
I know.
I mean, in November, the choice will be much easier because, frankly, you know, flesh-eating disease is worse than both pink eye or yeast infection.
That's so true. That's true. And McCain just screams flesh-eating disease,
exactly.
Doesn't he? Oh, my God, does he ever.
And here's a scary thought for you I had while I was on hold.
Yeah?
Attorney General Rudolph Giuliani.
Ah! Ah! That is scary.
Isn't that, and then I, when I, you know, the endorsement, you know, the on the news when they talked about Rudy endorsing McCain, I'm like, oh my God.
I know.
So, if you know, everybody, when you vote in November, just keep those words in your head, Attorney General Rudolph Giuliani.
I think my producer.
And pull the other lever.
I think my producer person wants to say something here, yes?
Secretary of State Joe Lieberman.
Oh.
All right. Oh. Paula, I got to go. Thank
all
you.
All right, have a great night.
All right, you too. Thanks
bye
for
bye.
Checking in. I appreciate hearing from you. Take care. Keep the emails coming.
This would be a great topic. We have to do this now, I'm convinced. Paula, thank you for the inspiration. Tomorrow, Friday, we have to do the worst-case scenario president and cabinet. If McCain were elected, who would we bring with him? If Romney got in there, if Huckabee drag Ashcroft back, wouldn't he?
All right, that's your assignment for tomorrow. Molly's in preschool tomorrow, so you'll have lots of time to do that. Michael is calling from the Bronx, New York, listening on the internet. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike, how you doing?
I'm all right. How about you?
I'm trying to hang in there. It was a bit of shock for Edwards. I would not count him out though, because. Just as what your producer was saying about the various scenarios, we could have a cabinet, Democratic cabinet, in which Edwards could very well be part of. Could be the running mate like he was with John Kerry. He could be Attorney General. So I wouldn't count Edwards out for anything. As far as McCain getting into office, I really can't see that happening because let me take you a trip down memory lane. You remember Bob Dole?
Yeah, he sold Viagra.
Well, I wasn't thinking of that. But remember, he ran against Clinton back in the 90s. I forgot the exact year, but Clinton was running for re-election. Clinton won by a landslide, and what was the big rhetoric people saying about Dole? He was too old, and he was like 77 at the time that he was challenging Clinton. Now, McCain is over 80 now. I think it's, what, 82? So
now? No. McCain, no. McCain is like 71.
He's 72. 71?
72. What they're trying to say is if McCain were elected, he would, in fact, be the oldest man ever elected president of the United States. I think Reagan was only 71.
Oh, I stand corrected.
Yeah,
and as far as Giuliani is concerned of his low numbers and being forced to back down, not to pat myself on the back, but I claim partial responsibility for that. And the reason being is, well, Mike, you know me long enough that when I have spoken with you, I have told you so much about Giuliani being a New York City resident
right.
The bunch of crap that he bestowed upon us New Yorkers. I was so determined to speak to you, speak to other people on the air. I've even visited political chat rooms to get the word out of Giuliani.
Yeah, but I remember for the first few years, everybody in New York loved him. You know, he cleaned up Times Square. You know, he couldn't get rid of the immigrants, so he had them all shot. As far as the racist cops up there, Giuliani never met a racist cop that he didn't love. He moved people off the street. He brought what was referred to up there as law and order in a city that desperately needed it. You know, there are very few white people in any of the boroughs up there. Maybe the outer boroughs, they don't particularly care. But Queens and Manhattan, the Bronx, there are very few people up there. It's my understanding, Michael, really, who didn't see Giuliani, at least for the first couple, 3 years, as being, you know, Mr. Wonderful. He was Jesus. He walked on water. He cleaned up the city, right?
He He really didn't clean up the city. I mean, crime did not go down. This was a new method of mafia-style organizing.
Right, I'm hip. I'm hip. You know, I know that. You know that. But a lot of people who lived in New York thought that Giuliani did a good job. And that's the coded message. And I got to leave it there, Michael. Thanks, man.
Okay, okay.
That's the coded message that was in the Giuliani campaign. You know, I'm a white man. Predominantly white, I'm Italian. I'm a white man, and I cleaned up the Negro situation in New York. Vote for me. I'll come and clean it up in your city. Come on. You know that. I know that. We all know that. That's always the subtext in America. Race. About 9 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, Ian Huff, who engineered the program tonight from our flagship station in Phoenix, KPHX. He also handled your phone call. Billy Foster, our technical director. Ben Birch, the podcast manager. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent. Bob Alexander, our resident philosopher. And once again, welcome to Dallas, Texas Truth Seekers. Checking in on I have it right here, 1360 AM, KMNY. I always think I'm talking about a New York station. 1360 AM, KMNY in Dallas. And thanks to the people who made this possible, and you all know who you are. And one last thing, our good friend and congressional candidate in Michigan's 9th, Nancy Skinner, needs your online vote. This costs you nothing. It only takes a few seconds. So, as a personal favor to your humble and obedient servant here, if you would go to democracyforamerica.com, democracyforamerica.com, and vote for her. If she wins the straw poll, it will get her some national campaign money. And if you want some more information about her campaign, visit skinnerforcongress.com, skinnerforcongress.com, okay? Let me see. This is from Kathy in Green Bay. Regarding the DLC, Mike, I just came back to the radio and heard somebody say that the DLC is running someone against Dennis Kucinich. Yeah, I believe that's the case, Kathy, back in his home district in Cleveland. Kathy writes, well, that makes my choice for president a whole lot easier, the bastards. I think what she means is goodbye, Hillary. Kathy then writes, by the way, the DLC used to list Obama as a member, but he adamantly denied that he was and asked to have his name removed. And then she lists a link at blackcommentator.com. She writes, this article was written while Obama was running for the Senate, and frankly, it makes him seem more progressive than I thought he was. Is the DLC misrepresenting his position to make him seem more like Hillary? Certainly Bill is. Yeah, well, you know, there's one thing, and it took me a while to get here. I know a lot of people have been here a long time, here being the realization that the Clintons really are interested in their own political power and not interested in the things that they talk about in their campaigns, in their position papers, and so on and so forth, that the Clintons are really... I mean, I voted for him twice, and if Bill Clinton were to run a third time, I'd probably vote for him again. You know, I'm sorry, beat me, flay me, make me do bad talk radio, but the Clintons are really street fighters where it concerns, and by street fighters I mean they're unfair fighters. All the talk about whether or not they said something ugly about the Bill Clinton said something ugly and race baited Barack Obama is true. I mean, it really is. You don't have to slide very deep into the muck in this country to hit the race button. You really don't. Bill and Hillary Clinton are not stupid. As a matter of fact, they are very, very, very bright. The thing about Bill Clinton is he was probably the smartest or the most intellectual or the most intelligent president in the history of this country. And Hillary Clinton would be a close second. So what? Well, so this, being as intelligent as they are and understanding the pulse of American politics the way they do and knowing how this country will always teeter on the issue of race, there is no way in hell for Bill Clinton or Hillary Clinton to deny that any comments that even obliquely refer to a race difference between historical figures is not calculated and deliberate, and also a coded message to the white people who might be thinking, well, I don't know. I don't know what to do here. I don't know what to do. Come on. These are not stupid people. Bill and Hillary are brilliant. They are political genii. They really are. So all this talk about, well, no, that's not what I meant. And I bought into it. You know, I mean, when I first heard it, I thought, well, wait a second. Sure, without LBJ, MLK would have been just somebody kept getting beat up on the streets. Not necessarily true. I took that attitude, and then now that comment is a couple of weeks old, and I've had a chance to read commentary from people a hell of a lot more insightful than I am, I've come to realize, no, Bill and Hillary do not make offhand statements. When Bill Clinton referred to the South Carolina vote in the context of Jesse Jackson in, what was it, 84 and 88 or whatever it was that Jesse Jackson won. I mean, it was very clear what he was saying. Yeah, you know, some black dude can come in here and win, but that doesn't mean anything. And the emphasis is not on the word dude. It's more on the word black. That's just the way it is. So I'll stick with the white guy. I'll stick with the white guy, Barack Obama. Why should I call him a black man? He's a white man. One of his parents is white. So, you know, why go along with the black thing? I'm going to call him. I don't mean to offend our African American listeners, and I don't mean to offend our European American listeners or our Asian American listeners or our Hispanic American listeners. Jesus Christ, I could sit here all night and go down that list. But why refer? You know, I'm just going to start. I'm going to start calling Tiger Woods a Thai golfer. Isn't his mother Thai? And Barack Obama is the white candidate from Illinois. Huh? You don't care what I call him, do you? I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. All right. Do take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.